Okay, let's picture this. Millions, I mean millions of vehicles out there on our roads.
Yeah, a staggering number.
And they don't last forever, do they? Eventually they hit the end of their life. And then what? You're looking at just mountains of metal, plastic, glass, all those complex electronics, managing that waste. It's a huge ongoing challenge.
Absolutely massive.
So this deep dive, we're really getting into a significant new proposal coming out of the European Union, one that's aiming to fundamentally change the whole automotive sector. I mean, from the very first design sketch all the way to that junkyard, essentially.
Making it much more circular, that's the goal.
Exactly, much more circular.
And we've managed to get hold of a presentation that sort of cuts through the jargon, you know, it summarizes the key bits of this proposed regulation.
Yeah, it gives us a good roadmap.
It does, shows what changes they're thinking about.
So our mission today really is to unpack all of this, pull out the most important insights, try to figure out, what problems is this thing actually trying to solve?
And how it plans to shift things.
Yeah, how it plans to shift the whole life cycle, how cars are made, used, and then crucially brought back into the loop. Okay, let's dive in.
So first off, it's really important to see this proposal in its wider context. This isn't just happening out of the blue.
Okay.
It's a core part of the bigger European Green Deal, and specifically the Circular Economy Action Plan.
Oh, okay.
And vehicles aren't just sort of mentioned in passing, they're specifically identified as a priority product, one of seven key value chains the EU is really focusing on to, you know, drive this whole circular transition.
So this is pretty central then to Europe's big picture goals on sustainability and resources.
Absolutely. And the core EU waste policy that this all connects to, it's really about that hierarchy. You know, first, try to reduce waste generation right at the source.
Design changes, things like that.
Exactly. Then promote high quality reuse and recycling. And finally, actually use those recycled materials back in new products.
Right.
This proposal wants to embed those ideas deep into the car industry.
Michael.
And, you know, if we connect this to the really big picture, doing this in such a massive industry, it also helps with other critical goals like decarbonization. And this is a big one, securing the supply of secondary raw materials.
Ah, right. Getting materials back from old cars means less mining.
Precisely, less reliance on virgin resources. And it lines up really nicely with other recent EU moves, like the proposals on critical raw materials and the battery regulation.
Okay, that macro picture helps frame it.
Yeah.
But specifically, what wasn't working with the old system? Why did they feel we needed this whole new regulatory approach?
Well, the source material points to a few key persistent problems. One is that a significant number of vehicles just go missing.
Missing out.
They reach end of life, but they never actually get properly collected and processed through the official authorized channels. They just sort of disappear from the records. Then there's the quality of the treatment itself. It needs improving to actually recover more value, more materials efficiently. And third, there's just a clear push, a need to mandate using more recycled stuff in brand new vehicles.
Got it. And the big structural change they're proposing is kind of merging things and making it stronger.
That's the regulatory heart of it, yeah. They're proposing to merge two existing laws directives, actually.
Okay.
One focused on the type approval side for new car design, making sure they can be recycled. That's the 3RTA directive.
Right.
And another older one focused purely on the waste management side, the original end-of-life vehicles, or ELV directive.
The one dealing with the actual scrapyards.
Pretty much. And the plan is to roll both of those into a single comprehensive regulation.
Okay, so one was about checking the design potential under single market rules, and the other was about the messy reality of handling the waste under environment rules. Now they're one. Why is shifting from a directive to a regulation such a big step here?
Well, the key difference is direct applicability. A regulation, once it's passed, it's just law directly across all EU member states, all at the same time.
Ah, no need for each country to write its own version.
Exactly. Unlike a directive, which needs that national transposition step. So a regulation means much more harmonization, less delay, fewer variations in how the rules actually get applied on the ground.
Okay.
For companies working across borders, manufacturers, recyclers, that consistency is, well, it's a really big deal.
Yeah, I can see that. That makes a change feel much more concrete. So if we lay it out, what are the main strategic goals, the sort of pillars that this whole proposal is built on?
The presentation breaks it down into six main objectives they're aiming for.
Okay.
One, design circular. So embedding this thinking right from the start in production.
Right.
Two, use recycled content, getting more recovered materials back into new cars.
Makes sense.
Three, treat better, improving how dismantling and recycling actually happens, quality and efficiency.
Okay.
Four, collect more. Trying to close that gap, find those missing vehicles.
Disappearing cars, yeah.
Five, EPR, that's extended producer responsibility. Shifting the burden onto manufacturer.
We'll definitely need to unpack that one.
And six, cover more vehicles, basically. Expanding the scope beyond just cars and vans.
Okay, those six pillars give us the what and why. Let's dig into the how now, the specific rules. Starting with chapter two, circularity requirements. That sounds like design and materials.
Exactly. This chapter is all about influencing what actually goes into a car and how it's, you know, put together. So there are rules about restricting certain hazardous substances.
Standard stuff.
Sort of, yeah. They'll work with ECHA, the European Chemicals Agency, on the specifics. They'll consider socioeconomic factors for any exemptions. And they explicitly say, look, anything specific to battery substances, that's covered under the separate battery regulation.
Okay, keeps things tidy. Now, the recycled content, you mentioned that pillar. Is this where we see actual targets?
Yes. And this is probably one of the most tangible changes in the whole proposal.
Yeah.
It introduces mandatory targets for recycled content in new vehicles.
Mandatory. Wow.
Yeah. For plastics, the target is a minimum of 25% recycled content overall. And here's the kicker. At least 25% of that 25% must come from closed loop recycling.
Meaning?
Meaning plastic from old cars going back into new cars. A direct loop.
Whoa, okay, that's very specific. Closed loop for car plastics. Are there targets for other materials too?
Not mandatory ones yet, but they mention they're looking at studies for potential targets for steel, aluminum, and also critical raw materials down the line.
Okay, so plastics first, others potentially later. What about the overall recycling rates, the ones we usually hear about, like 85% or 95%?
Right. The 3R rates, 85% reusable recyclable, 95% reusable recoverable, calculated using that ISO standard, those headline figures. They actually remain in place for now.
Okay.
But the proposal does signal that the methodology used to calculate those rates is going to be updated, probably to align better with all these new specific requirements.
Makes sense. And what about making cars easier to actually take apart when they reach the end? Is that in this chapter?
Yes, that's covered under design for removal. It brings in obligations for manufacturers to make certain key parts easier to remove and replace.
Like what parts?
They specifically call out the high voltage batteries in electric vehicles, EVs, and also the e-drive motors.
The really valuable or complex bit.
Exactly. Now, there's a bit of nuance here. This specific obligation to design for easy removal, right now, it only applies to passenger cars, M1, vans, N1, and the heavier types of motorcycles, L3, EL7E categories.
Okay, so it's targeted, at least initially. That covers the design side. What about the manufacturers themselves? What are their direct responsibilities under Chapter 3?
Right, so beyond just the design rules, manufacturers get hit with new reporting and strategy duties. For starters, they'll have to declare the recycled content.
We mentioned plastics.
Yes, but not just plastics. Also for steel, aluminum, magnesium, and even rare earth elements used in their vehicles. They need to report those figures.
That's quite a list.
It is. And they also have to submit what's called a circularity strategy.
What's that involve?
Basically describing their whole end-of-life process, the treatment tech used by their network, what actions they plan to take to improve circularity, and how their designs are changing to help meet these goals. It's like showing their homework for the whole life cycle.
So proving they have a plan, but just having a plan isn't enough if the folks actually doing the recycling don't have the right info, right?
Exactly. And this is a huge piece of Chapter 3. Manufacturers get a clear obligation to provide detailed information to the authorized treatment operators, the ATFs.
Information like what?
Like how to safely remove and replace those key parts, EV batteries, e-drive motors, procedures for proper depollution, how to identify parts that are good for reuse or recycling, where to find components that contain those valuable critical raw materials, even how to handle digitally coded parts.
That sounds crucial for the recyclers.
It really is. And here's an important point. This information requirement applies more broadly. It covers the expanded scope of vehicles too, buses, trucks, trailers.
Okay. So even if a big truck, wasn't specifically designed for super easy removal of, say, its battery yet.
Correct.
The manufacturer still has to tell the recycler how to get it out safely and properly.
Exactly. That information flow is mandated across the board, even for the newly included vehicle types.
That's a really critical distinction.
It is. And related to that, there's also a requirement for better labeling of parts and components, again, just to make sorting and identification easier and more efficient at the treatment stage.
Okay, all this definitely sounds like it's building towards shifting more responsibility onto the manufacturer's shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us neatly to Chapter 4 and Extended Producer Responsibility EPR. That's a major buzzword in waste policy circles.
Mm-hmm.
How does it play out for cars here?
This is probably the biggest shift, I'd say, in terms of who pays and who organizes the end-of-life stage. The core idea is simple. The manufacturers, the producers, become responsible for the waste stage of their vehicle.
So cradle to grave.
Mm-hmm.
Or cradle to cradle, hopefully.
That's the aim. The proposal sets up a framework for these EPR schemes specifically for end-of-life vehicles.
How do they work?
Well, it allows for different models. Individual companies could run their own scheme, or more likely, multiple companies could join together in a collective scheme. A hybrid is also possible.
Flexibility there.
Yeah. But it mandates that waste management operators, the recyclers, must have fair representation within these schemes. And it includes criteria for fee modulation.
Meaning?
Basically, the fees manufacturers pay into the EPR scheme can be adjusted based on how environmentally friendly their vehicle design is. So, cars that are easier or better to recycle could mean lower fees for the manufacturer. It rewards good design.
Ah, clever incentive.
It also includes a mechanism to sort out the costs when, say, a car is sold in one country but ends up being scrapped in another. Cross-border cost allocation.
That sounds complicated but necessary.
Very. And what costs do these EPR schemes actually have to cover? What's in that pot of money?
Good question.
The proposal says they should cover the net costs. That's the total cost of collecting the vehicles, depolluting them, and treating them, minus any money they make back from selling recovered spare parts or secondary materials.
So the actual financial gap.
Right. Plus the cost for things like running awareness campaigns to get people to return their old cars properly, issuing the certificate of destruction that's the document needed to officially deregister a vehicle, and all the reporting requirements that come with it.
So it's quite comprehensive.
It is. And again, the basic principles of EPR also apply to those expanded scope vehicles, buses, trucks, trailers.
Okay, so manufacturers aren't just designing differently. They're fundamentally picking up a big chunk of the bill for the whole end-of-life process. Still in Chapter 4, let's talk about the actual collection and treatment operations. What changes on the ground for the recyclers?
Right. This is where the rubber meets the road, you could say. The proposal brings in measures to improve both the quantity of vehicles collected, catching those missing ones, and the quality of what's recovered. And here's where it gets really interesting, I think. There are new incentives designed specifically to boost the reuse of parts.
How so?
Things like requiring labeling and even providing warranties for parts that are removed from end-of-life vehicles and sold for reuse.
Warranties on used parts, that's significant.
It is. And repair shops. They would actually have an obligation to offer repairs using reused, remanufactured, or refurbished parts where they're available and it's appropriate for the repair.
Wow, so actively building demand for those reused parts right into the repair system. That's quite clever.
Isn't it? It creates a pull for those parts.
Yeah.
There are also clearer waste management rules coming in, like a strict ban on mixing ELV waste streams with other types of waste, like old electronics, WEE, or packaging waste.
Keep things separate.
Exactly. And a ban on landfilling the non-inert shredded waste unless it's been treated first.
Right.
And remember, we talked about targets. There's another concrete target here. A new specific material recycling target just for plastics recovered from ELVs. It's set at 30%.
Okay, so 30% of the plastic coming out of old cars has to be materially recycled, on top of the overall reuse recovery rates.
Precisely. The proposal also updates some key definitions, removal, recycling, remanufacturing, refurbishing, to make sure they're consistent with wider EU waste laws.
Okay, standardization.
But maybe the most significant operational change for the treatment facilities themselves is the introduction of mandatory removal of specific parts and components before the main vehicle body goes into the shredder.
You mentioned design for removal earlier. This is the other side of that.
Kind of. This is an obligation on the treatment facility. They must take certain things out first. It's specifically aimed at making sure depollution happens correctly, maximizing the recovery of valuable stuff like critical raw materials, making sure reusable parts are actually saved before shredding.
And generally improving the quality of the metals and plastics that come out of the shredder afterwards.
You got it. And again, the basic treatment requirements apply to the expanded scope too.
Okay, mandatory pre-shredding removal. That feels like a really fundamental change in how recycling centers will have to operate. Let's move to Chapter 5, Used Vehicles and Export. This seems aimed squarely at that problem you mentioned first, the vehicles going missing.
Exactly right. A key reason vehicles disappear from the official EU end-of-life system is that they get exported, often labeled as used vehicles, when maybe they're not really fit for use anymore. They're actually end-of-life vehicles in disguise.
Ah, the loophole.
Pretty much. So this chapter tries to close that loophole.
How?
It introduces specific, clear requirements for exporting used vehicles. First, they must not legally be classified as an ELV. Second, they have to be roadworthy. And third, the exporter has to declare the vehicle identification number, VIN, and the last country where it was registered.
Okay, but how do they actually check that? How do you prove a car being shipped out is roadworthy and not just scrap?
The proposal plans to leverage digital systems. It talks about using interoperable vehicle registration databases across all the member states.
So they can talk to each other.
Yeah. And running automated verification checks through customs electronic systems. They specifically mention linking this up to something called the EU single window environment for customs.
Using tech to catch them.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And crucially, it provides a much clearer legal definition to distinguish a genuine used vehicle from an ELV. An ELV is defined as being technically and economically irreparable.
Okay.
Plus, there's an annex with additional indicative criteria like, is it missing key parts? Is it severely damaged? And the burden of proof is shifted. The owner or the exporter has to demonstrate that the vehicle they want to export is not an ELV according to these criteria.
So guilty until proven innocent, in a way.
You could see it like that. They have to provide the evidence it's a legitimate used car export. And these export rules, interestingly, apply to buses, trucks, and trailers, M2, M3, N2, N3O, but not to the motorcycle categories, L.
Interesting distinction. Okay, so using digital tracking and clear definitions to stop leaky exports.
Oh.
Finally, Chapter 6, Enforcement. How do they make sure all these complex new rules are actually followed on the ground?
Well, a key element is mandatory inspections. The proposal requires member states to conduct inspections covering at least 10% per year of authorized treatment facilities.
Yes, the ATFs.
No, also repair shops and other relevant operators to check they're complying with their obligations, like offering reused parts, for example.
Okay, boots on the ground checking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And member states also have to establish penalties for breaking the rules that are effective, proportionate, and dissuasive. You know, fines with teeth.
Right.
Enforcement is also sort of beefed up through the formal authorization and oversight process for the EPR schemes we talked about.
Checking the checkers.
Kind of, yeah. Plus, improved cooperation between authorities in different member states and updated, more detailed reporting requirements.
What kind of reporting?
Things like better data on the national vehicle fleets, how many vehicles are exported, how well the country is achieving those new recycling targets, information from the producer responsibility organizations running the EPR schemes. It's about better data for better oversight. And again, the basics of enforcement and reporting apply to the expanded scope too.
We've mentioned that expanded scope quite a few times now. Can we just quickly recap which vehicle types are actually being brought into this whole system and what's the timeline look like?
Absolutely. Good idea to clarify. So the current ELV directive, it mainly covers M1 passenger cars and N1 light vans. That's what we're mostly used to.
Right.
The new proposal significantly expands this. It explicitly adds the L category. That's motorcycles, mopeds, quads, etc. Then M2, small buses, M3, large buses, N2, light trucks, N3, heavy trucks, and the O category, which is trailers and semi-trailers.
Well, there's basically everything with wheels almost.
Pretty much the whole road fleet, yeah. But here's the important timing detail. The requirements for all these newly added categories. They generally apply 5 years after the regulation itself enters into force.
Ah, a phase in.
Exactly. Most of the really specific rules we've discussed, mandatory recycled content, the design for removal, EPR cost coverage, mandatory pre-shredding removal, those sorts of things will apply to the existing scope, the M1 cars and N1 vans, first, according to their own specific deadlines live out in the proposal.
Okay, so cars and vans get the rules first, then 5 years later, buses, trucks, motorcycles, trailers come fully under the same regime. That makes sense. And what about exemptions? Are there still vehicles not covered?
Yes, the general exemptions seem to remain. Things like special purpose vehicles, think maybe fire engines or mobile cranes, although parts of the base vehicle might still fall under some rules. Also, vehicles produced in very small series and vehicles that are considered of historical interest, classic cars, they're generally outside the main scope.
Okay, got it. Wow, this is clearly a massive comprehensive overhaul then. I mean, it touches on so many different parts of the value chain design, materials, manufacturing, recycling.
And brings in so many vehicle types that weren't really under this kind of spotlight before.
It really is. This proposal signals a huge strategic push by the EU. They're trying to move the entire automotive life cycle into a much more, well, stringent and harmonized circular economy framework.
It's about influencing design right at the start, making sure valuable materials stay in the loop, assigning very clear responsibility for what happens at the end of life.
Improving the actual recycling operations and trying to stop those vehicles from just slipping out of the system undocumented.
Exactly. All those pieces working together.
So what does this all mean for you, listening to this?
Well, it really depends on where you sit in the automotive world, doesn't it? If you're involved in designing vehicles, manufacturing them, supplying components, running a dealership, operating a repair shop, managing a treatment or recycling facility, maybe even handling vehicle exports. This proposal, assuming it gets adopted in something like this form, signals really significant changes coming down the track. Changes in the materials you use, how you design things, who pays for end of life, the logistics involved, and how those final collection and treatment steps are actually done and policed.
It sounds like a really necessary shift towards circularity, but maybe a pretty challenging transition for the industry to navigate.
I think that's fair to say. It certainly looks challenging. And, thinking about challenges versus goals, one little detail jumped out at me from that source presentation we were looking at.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
There was a slide right near the end explicitly titled, "What are the benefits?"
Okay. And what did it say?
Nothing. The slide was just the question. No bullet points, no details underneath.
Huh. That's interesting. Maybe a bit odd.
Well, it suggests to me that the conversation about the concrete, maybe quantified benefits, and perhaps also the discussion about the real-world difficulties and challenges of actually implementing something this complex across such a diverse industry, across all the different member states, that conversation is probably still very much ongoing within the EU institutions.
That's a fascinating observation.
Yeah.
So it leaves us with a question then. Based on everything we've unpacked, the problems they identified, the specific rules they're proposing, like EPR, mandatory recycled content, export controls, what kind of benefits do you think the EU is hoping to get? What's the big win they're shooting for with all this?
Well, if you connect it back to that initial why section, the hoped-for benefits almost certainly have to line up with solving those core problems and hitting those Green Deal targets we talked about. So they're likely aiming for, one, a big reduction in the amount of waste going to landfill or just disappearing unaccounted for. Two, a much higher quality and quantity of secondary raw materials being recovered from old vehicles, which, as we said, improves Europe's resource security, makes them less dependent on imports. And three, a contribution to climate goals, right? By keeping materials circulating for longer, reducing the massive energy needed to produce virgin materials like steel and aluminum from scratch, it's really about systematically trying to turn what's currently a major waste stream into a valuable resource stream for the European economy.
A huge ambition, definitely a lot to watch as this proposal goes through the whole EU legislative process.